Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Grateful. Illness revealed. NCAA Elite Eight. I'm Barton Eckert. Amanda Knox says she's tremendously relieved and grateful that Italy's highest court overturned her murder conviction in the slaying of her roommate. She reacted a few hours ago in Seattle.
I don't know. I'm still absorbing the present moment, which is full of joy.
The German newspaper Bild reporting that the co-pilot thought to have intentionally crashed the Germanwings plane into the French Alps was treated for a depressive episode. Correspondent Sarah Seidner.
That newspaper is saying that it has some internal memos that was sent from Lufthansa's own Aero Medical Center to German authorities that state talk about that depressive episode, and then goes on to say that he left around the same time that he stalled or stopped or suspended his training.
Duke, Gonzaga, Louisville, and Michigan State rounding out the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament. Duke dropped fifth-seeded Utah. I'm Barton Eckert.
And contact and capture confirmed. The one-year crew has arrived.
NASA astronaut Scott Kelly is on board the International Space Station after a successful docking with the Soyuz spacecraft. Kelly and his Russian colleague will spend an entire year in zero gravity. In New York, someone may have improperly tapped a gas line before an explosion at level 3 apartment buildings and injured nearly two dozen people. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
There is a possibility here that the gas line was inappropriately accessed internally by people in the building.
Military action in Yemen is intensifying. Saudi warplanes launched airstrikes against Shiite rebels for a second day on Friday. Tough week on the stock market, ending quietly. Major indices notched modest gains, but not nearly enough to make up for 4 days of losses. I'm Barton Eckert.
Today, Geico's stuff found in your car takes us under your passenger seat.
Hello, darling. Remember me? That earring you lost? I thought we were close. But then it took 15 minutes to notice I was missing in this ghastly carpeting. That's 15 minutes you could have used to switch your car insurance to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars. Money you could use for new earrings. And wouldn't that be nice? For you.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Visit geico.com today.
How strong is Allegra D?
It's my congestion's out of my way strong. Even in the park, playing with my dogs. Go fetch, Bosley.
Allegra D, a fast, non-drowsy antihistamine plus a powerful decongestant that starts relieving your toughest allergy symptoms in under 1 hour.
Allegra D is breathing free for 24 hours strong, even in the convertible.
Allegra D, strong relief for your allergy symptoms, guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com. Use only as directed.
North Dakota no longer has the lowest unemployment rate in the country. Correspondent John Stolness has more.
That honor now belongs to Nebraska, which had a 2.7% unemployment rate in February, better than North Dakota's 2.9%. That's according to new data out from the Labor Department on Friday. North Dakota had been the state with the lowest unemployment rate every month since October of 2008, thanks to discoveries of large amounts of oil and gas that created a lot of new jobs there. But the sharp drop in oil prices has led to some cutbacks in those areas. The state with the highest unemployment rate is Nevada at 7.1% last month. Unemployment rates fell from January in 26 states and rose in 6 states as well as the District of Columbia. I'm John Stolness, Washington.
Willie Nelson reportedly rolling out his own marijuana brand, getting ready to open a chain of marijuana shops in states where pot is legal. It'll feature Willie's Reserve brand. I'm Barton Eckert.
Geico presents Fan Mail to a Pig.
Dear Maxwell, I just want to say thank you for making my Geico insurance ID card digital. It's easy to find on the app, it doesn't give me paper cuts, and I always have it on hand because it's on my phone. Because of this, I finally cleaned out my glove box, which was filled with years of paper ID cards. Any thought on what I should put in my glove box now? Sincerely, Trent Patterson. Trent, what can you put in the glove box? Here's a crazy thought. How about gloves?
digital insurance ID cards just a tap away on the Geico app.
And the equity in your home. And while no one can stop all identity theft and nobody can monitor every single business, LifeLock Ultimate Plus provides their most comprehensive identity theft protection available. If you're filing taxes this year, especially if you're filing online, get LifeLock Ultimate Plus. Visit LifeLock.com and use promo code NASH or call and mention NASH to save 10%. Call 800-921-4110. 800-921-4110. 800-921-4110.
KGO 810 has your tickets to the San Francisco Flower and Garden Show, March 18th through the 22nd. Explore spectacular showcase gardens and learn from the top floral and garden experts in the world. To win tickets, visit the contest page at KGORadio.com. The Chip Franklin Show is on KGO 810.
You know, I've done a lot of things in my life. Like for 2 years, I used to work with animals. It was a great job. As some people called it, a chef.
Hear the news on KGO, then talk about it with Chip Franklin.
You ever look at yourself naked in the mirror and then suck your gut in? What's that for? Who are you fooling there? The mirror? You think the mirror's going to go, oh, I thought you were fat, but now you look great.
The Chip Franklin Show, weekdays noon to 3 on KGO 810. KGO, San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, a Cumulus station.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Iran, the suspect secret nuclear weapons program, the lengthy and non-transparent negotiations, P5 plus one, led by the bilateral negotiations between Secretary of State John Kerry and the foreign minister of Iran. Within these last hours, the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States, Ambassador Adel Al-Jubeir, quoting his government in America on television, "This is not something that I can comment on." When asked, will Saudi Arabia move to balance the Iranian weapons drive with one of its own? He did say that it cannot be ruled out. "The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia," is the quote, "will take whatever measures are necessary in order to protect its security." One interpretation, and it's dire, is that the nuclear arms race in the Middle East is on, with the civil war in Yemen, with the civil war in Iraq, with the civil war in Syria, with the threat to Egypt from the civil war in Libya, a nuclear arms race. We're on the eve of a crisis that will dwarf what we saw in the Cold War of the 20th century. And I'll check this opinion with John Bolton, writing most recently and presciently in the New York Times as an op-ed contributor about the Iranian bomb. Ambassador Bolton, a very good evening to you. And in the course of laying out your case in the New York Times 24, 48 hours ago, you flagged that a successful Iranian negotiation giving Iran the makings of a bomb program will lead to a nuclear arms race in the Middle East. It's already here, John. It didn't even wait 24 hours. Good evening to you.
Good evening. No, and it was entirely predictable. In fact, as you're kind enough to say, I predicted it, but others have spoken about it as well. What makes it worse is that my original thought was that Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, perhaps others would get nuclear weapons once there was palpable evidence that Iran had a bomb. They conducted a test or did something similar. Obama's negotiations, by making it abundantly clear the United States is essentially endorsing Iran's nuclear program, certainly not putting anything tangible in its way, has speeded up the calculation for the Saudis and others. They're not going to wait now for an Iranian nuclear test. The arms race has begun, and that is one of many grave and serious consequences of the entire Obama administration approach.
In conversation with David Albright and Dennis Ross, both men you know very well, Dennis Ross, Ambassador Dennis Ross, who has dealt with the Iranian threat for many years, and David Albright, who works as a physicist in looking at nuclear weapons programs, both men have used the term arms agreement or arms negotiation for the suspect secret nuclear weapons program talks. And both men have indicated to me that we cannot expect this to change the Iranian behavior in the region, the predation. Is that a fair spin on this, John, that the most Mr. Obama can present to the American people after all of these machinations is an arms agreement that is worth only what the enemy says it is?
Well, look, I think that's even that is optimistic. I think Iran will violate this agreement before the ink is dry. That's what they've consistently done with prior commitments on the nuclear side, beginning with their commitment to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty as a non-nuclear weapon state, which they've been violating from the outset. And I think they will both continue their effort to get a deliverable nuclear weapon. And they'll continue their support for international terrorism, which they've been the lead financer on these past 35 years. And they're going to continue to cause trouble across the region, as they are doing in Yemen, even as we speak, threatening the Saudis and the others from behind instead of just facing Iran across the Gulf. Now the al-Houthi, a surrogate for Iran, are behind them. And threatening the Bab el-Mandeb Strait at the bottom of the Red Sea there, that's the access point between the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden up to the Suez Canal. So this is very, very serious. And Iran senses a win here. They see the desperation of the Obama administration to get a deal. And they're just now, my guess, is squeezing the last concessions out of John Kerry.
What is to be done? In your op-ed presentation, you point to using weapons. I have a statement from Frederick the Great that might please you, John. Frederick the Great is said to have remarked, this is during the Napoleonic period, and it was much mentioned by Ambassador Metternich, who was in Paris dueling with the dictator. Metternich says that Frederick Great's quote was, "Diplomacy without weapons is an orchestra without instruments." Do you follow that, John, that we need weapons on the table for this to come to a happy end?
That's exactly right. The diplomat is never stronger than when he's backed by a credible threat of force. And the worst aspect, and it takes something to get to this point, but the worst aspect of Obama's diplomacy is the flippant way that he, in effect, dismisses the military option. When he says all options are on the table, he says it in such a disdainful way, offhand, you know, it's, I've got to read this script, I don't mean it. Everybody understands that. The Iranians don't think U.S. military force is on the table. The Israelis don't think it's on the table. Most members of Congress don't think it's on the table, which is why the spotlight is on Israel. I think we're down to two extraordinarily unpleasant choices. The most likely outcome here, whether Iran signs this deal or not, is they're going to get nuclear weapons. And the only thing that's going to prevent that is a preemptive strike against key aspects of their nuclear weapons program. And if the U.S. won't do it, that's why heads turn toward Israel to see what they'll do.
Is it necessary to destroy the whole program or to demonstrate that one part of the program can be damaged? Would that unseat the regime, John? Would that return us to that magic moment in June of 2009 where the opposition was in the streets in Tehran?
Well, look, this regime is very unpopular. I think if a strike against the nuclear program were accompanied by a real effort at regime change, we would be in a very positive position. I think we've wasted a huge amount of time by not giving more assistance to the opposition. Better to start later rather than not at all. And on the attack itself, you know, the opponents say this would be like the Iraq War, the Afghan War all over again. Absolutely not. This is a strike against certain key links in the nuclear fuel cycle, the uranium enrichment facilities, the little-known but critical uranium conversion facility, and a few others. We know where they are. The United States could do a much more thorough job, but Israel could do the needful.
And a strike at this point, given the crisis atmosphere in the Middle East, we're talking about World War Gulf here, John. They're not just using nukes now. They're using tanks, and Egypt is looking very seriously at deploying its navy as well as ground troops. Does that trigger us into a global conflict, one airstrike?
Well, look, the conflict here is between Iran primarily and the rest of the Middle East. ISIS is a threat. There's simply no doubt about it. We can deal with that threat. at least at this point, ISIS doesn't have a nuclear weapons program. If we allow themselves to consolidate their control over the territory they hold, they'll get to that next, which is why it's so critical to deal with Iran sooner rather than later. People believe that a strike against Iran would have regional consequences, but I tell you, the Arab states don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon any more than Israel does. They would applaud a strike that destroyed the Iranian program, and one can only wonder why the Obama administration is looking at the whole region through the wrong end of a telescope.
John Bolton is a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations for the Bush administration. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.
Are you working so hard to make a living you can't take time to make any real money? Is every day the same boring routine going nowhere and the money runs out before the month? My name is Ron LeGrand, and for over 30 years now, I've been helping clients take their life back by buying and selling houses with no money, credit, experience, or licenses. If you'll call 800-591-5236, 24 hours, and leave a message, I'll send you my new book and CD absolutely free so you can see how. I've bought hundreds of houses and trained thousands to do the same. Call 800-591-5236 to get your free starter kit until 500 are given away. You'll learn how to make a full-time income on a part-time basis without risk, largely tax-free, and 90% of the work done for you for pennies. That's 800-591-5236. Again, 800-591-5236. Take your life back and order now.
Geico.
I'm Chris Bjorklund with your Diamond Certified Report. Finding quality local contractors, showrooms, auto repair shops, and professionals is easy with the new Diamond Certified Directory. Just ask Bay Area resident Sharon Sides. She hired a painting contractor who's earned the prestigious Diamond Certified Award.
They were extremely professional. They showed up on time. They cleaned up every day. Their bids were always extremely detailed.
Sharon Sides will use Diamond Certified again.
Have it done professionally so you wouldn't have to worry about having the work done again, say, in a year or two. So we were very pleased with the Diamond Certified resources.
Only companies that rate highest in quality in a large survey of past customers qualify for Diamond Certified. For a free Diamond Certified directory for your area, go to diamondcertified.org. DiamondCertified.org.
Helping you understand the new order in the 21st century. This is the John Batchelor Show on KGO 810.
At Jumpstart MD, the revolution has begun. A revolution towards looking and feeling better. A revolution of losing excess weight, of good health, good habits, and healthy, active lifestyles. It means buying the clothes you want, not the ones you can't fit into. Will you join the revolution? Thousands of people in the Bay Area have, typically losing an average of 30 pounds in the first 3 months on the program. They take it off and keep it off with the personalized care and support of medically trained teams who understand why diets fail and how lifestyle changes succeed. You'll start with a personalized program based on your challenges, activity levels, and needs. You'll meet weekly with their team of medically trained experts to support your success. You'll eat fresh, whole foods that won't leave you hungry and craving more. Best yet, Jumpstart MD gets results. 3 to 4 times the results of other popular programs. Make the move. Jumpstart your life with Jumpstart MD. Call 855-JUMPSTART or go to jumpstartmd.com and start your own revolution.
Get all your equipment ready for spring planting with the help of your neighborhood CarQuest Auto Parts store. From farm and fleet filters to oil, grease, and lubricants, or batteries and brakes, CarQuest can help keep you and your equipment safely on the move for the coming season. Stop in today and check out the fleet and farm specials. Professional grade parts and advice. CarQuest Auto Parts.
Roll in to CarQuest and roll on.
At the Honda Dream Garage sales event, we've got great deals on almost everything Honda makes, like the technologically advanced Honda Civic, a 2015 IIHS top safety pick. A fact that makes us engineers here at Honda feel like proud parents. I'm sorry, I'm gushing, but the Civic has a rear-view camera and hands-free calling standard and... Oh wait, have I shown you the pictures?
During the Dream Garage sales event, get 0.9% APR financing for well-qualified buyers on a 2015 Civic. Now, at your Honda dealer.
See your local dealer for financing details.
Government, politics, and fiscal discombobulation. We're talking about it on The John Batchelor Show on KGO 810.
I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. The Obama administration, late in the second term, the lame duck period, we have now conversations in foreign policy and domestic policy that are unhappy and at the same time compelling because they are major themes in American success these last 200 years. Daniel Henniger, who writes Wonderland for the Wall Street Journal, is looking very closely at the conversation about race introduced by an odd player, Starbucks chief executive Howard Schultz, who within this last week put out the word to baristas across the land and perhaps around the world to have conversations with customers about race. And there was even a checklist that you were to go through and ask about how many people you know of another race. And race in this term is entirely meant in terms of color. It is not terms of German race, French race. That language was lost 100 years ago. That's an antique now. We're using race in terms of color. That conversation was, to my knowledge, interrupted because the baristas or the customers rejected it. However, here we are talking about race, and at the same time, the Obama administration and its agents and its sympathizers in Congress are talking about race when it comes to the long wait for the confirmation of Loretta Lynch to be the attorney general. She's now a federal prosecutor from Brooklyn in New York and would be the first female African-American race attorney general. Dan, a very good evening to you. All this mushes together into the question about the Obama administration and race relations right now after 6 years of an attorney general who's African-American and a president who's African-American. There are other significant posts here. Has it brought clarity, Dan, to your reading? Good evening to you.
Hi there, John. I think the last thing we have out there at the moment is clarity. There's a lot of confusion. Continue with the C words, the idea was that we should have a conversation about race. That was what Howard Schultz was picking up on. The problem is that the language, the words, and what's being said about race, by and large, is so discouraging. It's such a downer, and that's especially so in light of the fact that we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the March on Selma, which is also happens to be the 50th year of, or at least last year was, the 50th year of the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And so this has come together in the nomination of Ms. Lynch to be Attorney General. It's held up. It's got caught up in politics in the Senate between Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell. And the Democrats have gone on the offensive. Senator Dick Durbin said that she is the first African-American woman nominated, and she's being asked to sit in the back of the bus when it comes to the Senate calendar. The head of the Congressional Black Caucus said, "I think race certainly can be considered a major factor." I thought these were pretty disturbing remarks to make at this point in time. And so inevitably, the president himself was asked whether race was a factor in the holdup of the Lynch nomination. And Mr. Obama said, quote, "I don't know about that," unquote. In other words, he didn't say, "No, I don't believe race could be an issue in Lynch in the nomination at this point in time." He said, "I don't know about that," which effectively says, "Yeah, maybe." And I think this amounts to accusing the Republicans in the Senate, at least some of their number, of literally being racist, opposing Ms. Lynch only because she's black. Really a quite remarkable level, to me at least, to be discussing this subject in the year 2015.
That's not a conversation, Dan. That's an accusation. That's an allegation. Yeah. That's a charge. It's a very aggressive. And I felt I stepped into a Starbucks hand, Dan, to prepare for talking about this last week. And what I saw was a very crowded Starbucks. It was right off 57th Street, very fashionable. What I saw was two African-American males behind the counter working extremely hard to get all those orders right. And everybody else in the store, and I didn't count who was what, were on their iPhones. So there was a store full of iPhones with people attached to them. And they were doing instant messaging. No one was talking. Absolutely no one. There wasn't any time. Time is money. It's Starbucks. And I thought, well, this isn't going to go well. But then when you reintroduced it to me in your column today, I thought, this does connect with the Obama administration, the president and the attorney general and the deputy minority leader of the United States Senate. They're not looking for conversation, Dan. They're looking for political advantage. The only thing I can imagine they were making those remarks about is that because they thought it gave them the upper hand in something they wanted.
Yeah, but it's using a very, you know, volatile subject to gain the upper hand. The last thing this country needs is deeper divisions along the lines of race. And what I discovered as I tried to pull this column together was that there are, in fact, any number of significant black people out there. And what is most interesting is none of them are in politics. They all operate outside politics, mostly in entertainment. And they've been going public recently saying they would like to get past this obsession over the word race. Most significantly, the hip-hop singer and actor named Common, who won the Academy Award for the title song to Selma, the title song Glory, which he wrote with John Legend. He got on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and he said, look, we all know racism exists. But let's forget about the past as much as we can, and let's move from where we are now. How can we help each other? Can you try to help us? Because we're going to help ourselves, too. And you find others saying the same sort of thing, that they're tired of being bogged down in this conversation over race in this way, because it's a dead end. It's reductionist. Nothing gets solved. It simply kind of picks at a wound makes the possibility of progress more difficult. So I ultimately was encouraged to find that there are people who kind of want to move away from talking about race as such an obsession.
The quote from your column, as the Obama presidency ends, the status quo on race is in a bad place. Just here at a moment, Dan, because we can see the bouncing headlines right now about the crisis in Yemen, about the crisis in Iraq, about the crisis throughout the Middle East, and of course there's disorder in other parts of the world, Ukraine, I mumble. As the Obama presidency ends, I rewrite your sentence, the status quo on everything is in a bad place. Dan, there's a sense of disorder. Is that on purpose for Mr. Obama? Does he get an advantage from this?
I don't know. He's not getting an advantage from it, though I think it is flows out of his modus operandi, which is to raise these difficult issues like race, or in the case of Israel, the possibility of a Palestinian state. And he talks about them, and then being politics, you know, there's always two sides to an argument, he gets pushback from the other side. And instead of addressing it and dealing with it, the president's modus operandi is generally to walk away from his opposition and let them twist. Now, in domestic politics, all that has produced is political gridlock. But in the Middle East, his alienation from Netanyahu and the Israelis, and I might add Saudi Arabia as well, hasn't produced gridlock. It has produced chaos. And so the president not getting his way and then refusing to address the consequences of not getting away, I think is what is leading to this disorder. And again, in the United States, we just get bogged down in our domestic politics. But what's happening in the Middle East now with Yemen, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt is a situation spinning dangerously out of control.
Daniel Henniger is the deputy editor of the editorial page of The Wall Street Journal. He writes Wonderland. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show.
Get the IRS off your back now with one phone call. Talk to a live professional tax relief agent and stop worrying about your tax problems. Wall & Associates offers free face-to-face consultations. That's right, a free face-to-face consultation with a knowledgeable tax specialist. That's the Wall difference. It's easy. We solve tax problems. Call 800-773-5750. That's 800-773-5750. You always speak with a live person. If you owe the IRS, your tax problems will not go away. No other company can help you like Wall. Our average client settles for about 10% of their tax debt. Wall & Associates has settled thousands of cases for a small fraction of what was owed. You always speak with a live person. Call now for a free face-to-face consultation, not a solicitation for legal services. Call 800-773-5750. That's 800-773-5750. 800-773-5750.
Hi,
buying a car just got a whole lot easier. Hey, it's Sean Del Grand at the best-in-class Buick GMC dealer in the nation, Capital Buick GMC. And you've heard me say that at Capital Buick GMC, complacency is not an option, and that we're always searching for fresh new ways to get better. Well, you spoke, and we listened. Starting right now, you can buy any car, truck, or SUV with confidence, knowing you'll be getting our brand-new, exclusive, no-brainer price right up front. A no-brainer price based on the KBB.com price advisor from Kelley Blue Book, the trusted resource. Now that makes me happy. So be happy. Lock in your no-brainer price right up front at Capital Buick GMC on the Capital Expressway in San Jose or online at DGDG.com. That's DGDG.com. Proud member of the Del Grant Dealer Group.
Get your no-brainer price right up front. And remember, no-brainer means no headaches.
Thank you.
You know, you've been doing commercials for your own hotel for a long time, and people think they start to get to know you. What was it like working for your dad, and what's it like for your kids working for you?
Working for my father, like in any family business, is always a little bit challenging, and I'm sure the two children that are working with me are finding the same thing. On one hand, you're the parent. On the other hand, you're the boss. We're all focused on what we want to do, which is to have a beautiful hotel and deliver the service that the customer wants.
The KGO package. Now, we've talked about that before. It's the one thing that people really pay attention to for good reason. What does this KGO package really give me?
It's really an incredibly inclusive package. You get a deluxe room, you get 20% off at the Daily Grill, I'll include the parking, and you get 10% at Macy's and 10% discount at Bloomingdale's.
Sure, you can go to the web and it's handlery.com, but you can also just pick up a phone and call
800-995-HUSH and ask for the KGO package.
Handlery Union Square Hotel. Family owned with a great number.
Megabus.com offers safe, convenient, affordable express bus service for as low as $1 via the internet. Megabus.com has served more than 40 million customers in more than 100 cities across North America. Their luxury single and double decker buses offer free Wi-Fi, power outlets, panoramic windows, and are green certified. Travel in comfort and confidence. Megabus.com. Express buses between San Francisco and six cities. Reserve seatings available. Visit Megabus.com and book your ticket today.
Do you suffer from aching, cramping, or restless legs? Or do you have unsightly varicose or spider veins? Dr. Mark Isaacs at Vein Specialists of Northern California can help. For over 25 years, they've specialized in the latest office-based, non-surgical vein treatments. Procedures take under an hour with absolutely no downtime. Your legs will be pain-free and vein-free in time for spring. Visit Vein Specialists of Northern California now at VEINSPEC.com and schedule your free ultrasound evaluation.
Helping you understand the new order of the 21st century. The John Batchelor Show on KGO 810.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. A mystery. Part of the mystery begins Saturday, September 21st, 1929, a year before, a month before the end of the world. This headline, Interior and the Business Opportunities of the New York Times, girl novelist held in San Francisco, Barbara Newhall Follett, 15, ran away to avoid going to school, she says. San Francisco, AP, a desire for freedom and an aversion to school led Barbara Newhall Follett, child novelist of New Haven, Connecticut, to leave her friends in Los Angeles and come to San Francisco, she told juvenile court authorities today. She is held at the detention home for Los Angeles officers. Miss Follett, who was 15 years old, was arrested last night at a local hotel on a telegraphic warrant from Los Angeles. Advices from Los Angeles said the girl's detention had been requested by friends. She will be returned to that city and released to, quote, responsible parties, it was said. Both the girl and officers declined to make known who the parties are. Miss Follett is the daughter of Wilson Follett, a writer. She had recently returned from the Hawaiian Islands. Paul Collins is here, writing most recently on this mystery, and he has solved a great deal of it for us. This is a literary mystery, but at the same time, it is part of the story of people trying to reinvent themselves, and successful or failure, it is haunting 100 years later. Paul, a very good evening to you. Writing most recently at Lapham's Quarterly, you introduce us to Barbara when she's 3 years old, and her father sees her as a prodigy. Who is Wilson Follett, and what does he see in Barbara? Good evening to you.
Oh, it's good. Good to be here. Well, Wilson Follett was a writer and an editor. He'd been doing work with Knopf, and among others, and a great deal of magazine work as well. And later on, he became fairly well known for a book of his called Follett's Modern American Usage, which became very very common reference work for grammar and usage. And yeah, he noticed his young daughter Barbara becoming interested in letters. She would see letters everywhere. She would, if she'd see the field goal at a football field, it would be an upside down H or something like that. She would see letters in the environment around her, and so he sat her in front of a typewriter, and she immediately took to it. I mean, much in the same way now we would just think of a kid maybe becoming interested in a computer. But back then, it wasn't so common to have a typewriter as a toy for your three-year-old. But she immediately took to it and started writing.
Her mother decided, or the family decided, to homeschool her. The Folletts, they're living in New Hampshire when the story begins. Tell me about the family. What do we know about Wilson, his ambitions, and what do we know about the mother? There will eventually be a second child.
Yeah, so they were a very literary family, and he had been doing freelance work, a great deal of work with New York publishers, doing editing projects, things like that for them. And then his wife Helen, at that point, it seems like, was primarily occupied with raising the kids. Although she was a literary talent in her own right, and in fact later on would wind up writing a number of works herself. And so yeah, initially they were very focused on bringing up Barbara, and that in a way, I guess, kind of accounts for the way that their child developed. She had friends nearby and was certainly part of the neighborhood that they were in, but she was also developing much, much faster than other kids in terms of especially her artistic talent. She was interested in poetry. She was interested in reading. She was interested in music. And in a way that maybe you can't in an institutional setting, she was just able to run with it. And that's that's something that's maybe not so uncommon to see, especially with homeschooled kids.
I understand she also is a musician. She could play the violin, but you feature her 8-year-old Barbara now writing 4,000 words, and you tell an anecdote of her pinning a note to the door of her bedroom saying, "Stay out," and the typewriter clacking away. Did her mother and father encourage this? Did they think she was magnificent, or did they worry about her being insular?
No, this seems to be something that they encouraged, because at one point, her father actually wrote an article for Harper's talking about his daughter doing this, talking about her using the typewriter and it being kind of an educational tool, and just more broadly suggesting this idea that maybe the typewriter is something that parents should be paying a bit more attention to. Because for one thing, for Barbara in particular, it removed a very basic frustration that children often have, which is that their desire to express themselves lags behind their penmanship. And so this was a way for her to really to kind of get it out. And so Wilson was clearly intrigued by that idea of her writing. I don't know if anyone quite imagined how much she was going to write, and that she had taken it upon herself to start writing a full-fledged book. And eventually she wrote a book that stretched over 40,000 words.
Yeah, let's get to that book. The first title you feature is a short story, which I like the title immediately, The Life of the Spinning Wheel, the Rocking Horse, and the Rabbit. She then learns to versify to music and then starts the novel. And you note there was several drafts, lots of attempts, and a house fire. What do we know about the house fire? Was it accidental sort of thing that happened in the the house fire would have been early 1920s?
This would have been around 1922, 1923.
Was there some tension in the family about a fire? That worried me. It was like you were writing a story here, Paul. I was hooked.
Well, it is a bit of foreshadowing, I guess, although I don't know if the fire was just an ordinary household fire or anything more.
But it destroyed a manuscript, so she had to start again.
Yeah, it did destroy the manuscript, though. So, she had to start over on that. And fortunately, she was fluid enough in her writing that this was not as devastating as it might have been.
It's 1926. She produces the novel, The House Without Windows. But now, not enough for this novel. Not enough. They have to publish it. And not enough just to publish. Paul, they climb the mountain and they aim for the sky. They send it to Knopf. Was Dad connected?
Yes, he was. And so that doesn't hurt.
No.
On the other hand, it only helps to a point because ultimately, a publisher is not going to publish something unreadable as a favor to someone on its staff. I mean, at some point, it has to be able to carry itself, and it does. And in fact, there was no inside track as far as it actually getting accepted. She had to wait, just like any other author, to get the letter in the mail from New York, and she did. And there's a wonderful letter that she wrote right after getting the news where she was just flabbergasted and just overjoyed that she was actually going to be published.
And in the eyes of her father, this was a great success, or was he competitive?
I think he was somewhat competitive, but a lot of the interest does seem to have come from her. In other words, It seems like the initial idea, at least on Barbara's part, was to write the book, maybe to publish it, maybe just as a local thing at the local printer or something like that. But it may have been that the crucial step from kind of a local vanity project to it going to a New York publisher was Wilson and the fact that he was there.
She's asked to review A.A. Milne, for heaven's sakes. H.L. Mencken writes about her. She's celebrated. She's the voice that sells Winnie the Pooh.
Her book winds up actually getting reviewed in the New York Times Book Review, and it gets a glowing review. That's a hard thing for most adults to pull off, let alone someone who's still a kid.
We come to the pinnacle, the zenith of Barbara Follett. Her book is published, she's celebrated, she's written about, she's regarded by H.L. Mencken, who's not an easy audience, as perhaps the greatest future critic. And now the turn. Paul Collins, writing for Lapham's Quarterly on The Vanishing Act. When we come back, crash. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show.
Like the taste of fresh apples? Try an Angry Orchard hard cider. At Angry Orchard, we believe in tradition. That's why we use apples from a 100-year-old orchard. It takes two apples to make each bottle of Angry Orchard. So raise a glass to a time when apples were best served in a pint glass. Angry Orchard, when you're looking for something a little different. Crisp, refreshing, and not too sweet. Just like me. Angry Orchard hard cider. Branch out.
Angry Orchard Cider Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Drink responsibly. Do you freak out every time you break out? Well, I've got one word for you. Proactive. There's a huge reason Proactive is the number one acne treatment in the country. It totally works. Prescription-grade Proactive heals your acne and even prevents future breakouts. How great is that? There's a reason why so many celebrities use Proactive. Their faces are their money. And I'm telling you, it's time to get it because Proactive has set up a special dedicated 800 number. So get ready to punch that number into your phone. Pull over if you have to. Here's the deal. $19.95 gets you Proactive, plus a rotating deep cleansing brush. It's valued at $45, and it's yours free. So is the shipping. For only $19.95, you, my friends, are guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you'll get your money back. Here's the number. 1-800-543-3313. Got it? Good. Call for a lifetime of beautiful skin. 1-800-543-3313. 1-800-543-3313.
Geico Motorcycle presents Reflections from the Road.
Let me tell you, the road is a much more relaxing place since I switched to Geico Motorcycle Insurance and started saving money. With that taken care of, now I can think about deep, important things. Like how come it's a pair of pants when there's only one of them? A real brain teaser. But hey, at least saving money with Geico Motorcycle is as easy as pie. What does that mean, anyway?
Geico Motorcycle Insurance. See how much you could save.
Let me tell you a little story. Back in 2009, I bought a Mercedes-Benz for my wife, Jan. She loved it. She loved it so much, she drove it for more than 120,000 miles. Well, a few months ago, I had thought maybe it's time to trade it in. My daughter, Laura, suggested we surprise her with a brand new Mercedes as a holiday gift. Laura and I told Jan we needed to take her car to run an errand. She had no idea that we were really taking her old Mercedes to Mercedes-Benz of San Francisco to trade it in. We were greeted by a friendly, knowledgeable, no-pressure sales staff. They've got a great selection of cars, over 600 vehicles in stock from the combined inventories of Mercedes-Benz of San Francisco and Mercedes-Benz of Oakland. They had the new model we wanted in the right color right at the dealership. You should have seen Jan's face when we drove up the new car to meet her for lunch. And I was really thrilled by how pleasant it really is to buy a car at Mercedes-Benz of San Francisco. Mercedes-Benz of San Francisco is on 8th Street between Bryant and Brannan, and you can find Mercedes-Benz of Oakland on Broadway in downtown Oakland. And of course, you can shop online anytime from the comfort of your home or office or on your mobile device. Just go to 1-800-NEW-BENZ.com.
Attention homeowners. Rates have dropped again and are at all-time historic lows. If you refinanced your mortgage into a 10, 15, or 30-year fixed rate within the last 18 months, you need to call Home and Loan Finders now. We'll redo your loan at a lower rate with absolutely no closing costs. That's right. No title fees, no appraisal fees, no escrow fees, no fees, period. With fixed rates at 60-year lows, you may be able to start saving money immediately, and it won't cost you a dime. It's really that easy. We'll refinance your loan, and we pay for everything. Call Home and Loan Finders now to lock in a low fixed rate today with 0 points or fees at 800-914-7290. Even if you're in process with another lender, you need to call Home and Loan Finders now. Call 800-914-7290. That's 800-914-7290. 800-914-7290. Loan limits and restrictions apply. Rates and terms are subject to change, and not all applicants may qualify. Licensed by the California Department of Real Estate, number 01837288, NMLS number 308085.
We're all used to inflation when prices and interest rates go up. But now, some experts think the U.S. is experiencing deflation when prices and interest rates go down. So what does that mean for you? Well, besides lower prices, it means mortgage interest rates are also lower, which means it's a great time to make the cash call at 877-890-CASH and refinance your mortgage and save, even if you refinanced recently. Today, Cash Call's 15-year fixed is 2.875% rate and APR with absolutely no closing costs, no points, no fees, nothing. So make the cash call at 877-890-CASH and save with a lower interest rate, pull tens of thousands out of your home, or maybe do both. Cash Call. We're designed to save. Call 877-890-CASH today. That's 877-890-CASH.
Impact Mortgage Corp. DBA Cash Call Mortgage. Equal housing lender. Call 866-900-8744 for terms and restrictions. Rates may change without notice. California Department of Business Oversight Residential Mortgage Lender Law License 413-1083. NMLS 128231.
That's 877-890-CASH.
You're listening to The John Batchelor Show on KGO 810.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Paul Collins, writing for Lapham's Quarterly, looking at a mystery, unsolved, of a novelist who is celebrated in the 1920s as a child, as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old, an early teenager. Her name is Barbara Follett. And yet, there was a moment as she's a young adult that the family suddenly faces a crisis. And I wasn't prepared for it, Paul. Dad walks out. Why?
Well, he walked out to another woman. And so, and this, I mean, that's devastating enough in and of itself, but it was coming just as Barbara Follett was apparently at her peak. She had just put out a second book. You know, it was one thing to put out this sort of, you know, it was kind of a fairy tale story, basically, and a very charmingly written one, The House Without Windows. But she then, the next year, in 1928, wrote a second book, a travelogue called The Voyage of the Normandy. And it's actually a very assured book. You can really see her growing into an adult voice. And you can actually see that this is someone who's not maybe a one-trick pony, that there's a pretty serious writing talent at work here. And right on the heels of that coming out, he leaves. And it's devastating. It's emotionally devastating. It's also financially devastating.
Right.
Suddenly, she and her mother are without much support.
Dad leaves, and Barbara and Helen are together without any confidence in the future. And this is about the moment that we see them traveling. Remember, they traveled for the second book, and that would explain that news item in the New York Times about just returned from Hawaii and in San Francisco, running away from Los Angeles. So this, at this point, is a very troubled young person, very troubled. And it's at the eve of the collapse of civilization, of the confidence, the beginning of the darkness of the 1930s, all coming together as if it's being written. Paul, that's what's so compelling about this story. You can't make this stuff up, and yet it feels as if it's being written by a master novelist. We want Barbara to have a happy ending. It's not in front of us. Does she continue to write? You say that she becomes a clerk. Does she write while she's a clerk?
Yeah, and she describes getting up early in the morning. She has a job in like a typing pool in New York City, and she's getting up every morning to take the subway to work.
1930s, all through the 30s, yes.
Right, right. So, you know, she's still a teenager at this point. She's still in her late teens now, and she's but she has to earn a living. So this is someone who in just the space of a couple of years has gone from a child wonder to just having to make ends meet somehow, having her and her mom sort of scratching along to make a living.
She publishes Lost Island, which that's her third book, a travelogue, a brisk travelogue on the Appalachian Trail. And on the Appalachian Trail, she publishes Travels Without a Donkey. Are those the same quality of writing of before Dad left?
Well, those didn't actually get published. They did get written. So that was one of the difficulties that she ran into, which was that she was still writing, but she had lost her in with the publishing world. She was in contact on and off with her dad, and the Depression had just started. So getting much of anything published at that point was becoming very difficult, and so she had stuck with it. She was still writing. And the writing was good. You know, one of the challenges she faces is that if you write a decent novel when you're 13, that's an amazing achievement. If you write a decent one when you're 18, that's interesting, but it's less notable.
Right.
But she was continuing to grow as a writer, and had she continued getting that kind of attention and support from a publisher, I think she clearly, from looking at what she was writing, would have gone on to do great things. But publishers at that point were just trying to not go bankrupt like everybody else.
She's just turned 20. She's traveled a lot. You write that she backpacked in Europe. She took dance classes at Mills College. She's without a high school degree. She's without a college degree. That's not profoundly negative in the 1930s. Many people who did very well in life did not have a college degree. But the relationship with the mother looks troubled. And then she meets a man. Who is he?
Nickerson Rogers. And, you know, in some ways, it was certainly the closest she had to stability in her adult life. And in fact, the fourth book that she wrote, Travels Without a Donkey, is basically an account of the two of them going up the Appalachian Trail. So he becomes very much a part of her life and her work, and they basically elope and get married.
And the marriage is immature, it's young, they're troubled. Does he have money, or is he hardscrabble as well?
He has some, but not a lot, and so it's they're making their way, and it's the Depression, I think it's hard to know what to make of someone else's marriage, especially when you're just looking at letters many decades later. But they're a young couple. They have the usual ups and downs, probably that anyone would.
And we come to December 7th, 1939. What do we know happens?
Well, we know that she had been away. She'd actually been taking some classes at Mills College in California, taking some dance classes, and really getting kind of revived by this idea of maybe going back and getting an education again. So in some ways, things were looking up. But she was worried about her marriage. And when she got back to Boston, she found that things were not going well, and she hints at another woman in one of her letters at that point. Whatever the cause, on December 7th, 1939, they have an argument. She leaves the apartment and walks out the door and never comes back.
Never comes back, never seen again. Her mother, her husband did not turn to the police as a missing persons. There is no evidence of foul play. And many years later, her mother uses detectives to look for her. Do they turn up any trail at all?
None. And her husband waited a while to even report her missing, in part probably because this maybe hadn't been the first time that had happened. So it wasn't maybe taken as seriously as it should have been, but she doesn't come back, and days turn into weeks, and weeks turn into months, and there's no trace of her. The strange thing is that at the time, especially because she was under her married name of Barbara Rogers at that point, when this turns up as a missing persons thing in the police and locally, nobody notices it. Nobody realizes, this is the famous novelist we were hearing about just a decade ago.
Remember, she ran away earlier at 15. That begins with the Times report. So running away was something in her past. And now we end the mystery, except not. You make a phone call, Paul. To whom?
Well, I became intrigued by this case because it wasn't until the 1960s when her mother started talking about what had happened to Barbara that people started realizing, this woman disappeared and nobody knows what happened to her. So I started looking around and I found a copyright renewal from the 1950s for The House Without Windows, and it was attributed to Mrs. Nickerson Rogers. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I did some public record searching and found someone who looked like was his wife. He had passed away in 1980. And so I called. This was in 2000. And this woman picks up. And I said, do you know Barbara Follett? I'm doing some research on her work. And there was a long pause. And she said, yes. Yeah, I knew her. And it was a very strange moment for me. This is Anne B. Rogers. And I was not sure what the B stood for. I didn't know if I was talking to Barbara Follett or not.
Right.
I had this very strange conversation where I asked her about Follett, and so she was very charming, very talented.
We have about 30 seconds, Paul.
And it turns out that she was the second wife. And so I decided to let the story be for a while. This was a nice old lady in her late 80s, and so I waited a decade and then decided it was time to write about Barbara Follett.
Paul Collins teaches creative writing, Portland State University. He's on NPR as a literary detective. He's the author most recently of Edgar Allan Poe, The Fever Called Living, and this story of the still missing Barbara Follett, prodigy of the century ago, is in Lapham's Quarterly. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show.
The all-new 2015 Acura TLX is a nearly indescribable thrill. To explain that thrill, we could have hired a proper documentarian.
The TLX stalks the hairpin turn. It waits with high-octane aggression. Let's watch as it devours the road with savage precision.
Or that voice from that movie trailer.
In a crowded luxury market, one sedan has what others only dream of. Sport Plus mode, 8-speed dual-clutch transmission, and plenty of cup holders.
Or even an enthusiastic play-by-play announcer.
And hitting cleanup, the TLX. Sport Plus mode's a huge advantage here. And, oh, there's a drive deep right field. Back. This car's out of here.
We could have tried all of these, but nothing comes close to experiencing the thrill of the TLX like driving it. Come in and test drive the all-new 2015 Acura TLX. It's that kind of thrill.
Visit your Northern California Acura dealer today for amazing lease deals on the all-new TLX. For details, visit AcuraNorCalDealers.com.
Get it first with KGO Radio and KGO News Alerts. Text NEWS to 35253 or sign up now at KGORadio.com.
KGO, San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.